Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant! Bale getting it on! It's scoring for Tottenham!
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
Welcome back to the all-new, all-dangerous Wheeler Dealer Radio. We're here for another exciting week with another exciting podcast. I am your host, Skipjack, otherwise known as Gred. We are joined, as always, by Lennon's Eyebrow, Tottenham's biggest pro wrestling fan. Ben, how you doing?
What's up, everybody?
And we have a world debut on this week's podcast. He is 1.5 podcasters above replacement. Michael Cayley, welcome to Wheeler Dealer Radio.
Thanks so much, guys. What's going on?
No numbers yet, but we're going to get there. So, I'm going to tell you a story. A story about a team that had no idea what to do for 30 minutes and got spanked by their opposition. And then, in lieu of effective instruction or coaching by their manager, decided to figure out what to do amongst themselves and then clawed their way to a result. Which week of Tottenham am I talking about, Ben?
All of them? No, we've lost some games.
Oh, good point. Good point. But I think we can all agree this basically describes how the game against West Brom went. How irritated were you, Ben, when we went down 3-0? Was it bothering you at all, or are you just numb to it at this point?
I have lost the capacity to be irritated, which is the saddest statement I can make on the state of this season. Yeah, I guess it was 3 minutes in. We were two goals down, and I gave none of the fucks. It was just so frustrating to see the same story play out. I mean, you know, we saw this happen against Liverpool and Man City, but to see it go down like this against West Brom, it's fucking embarrassing.
Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I was honestly just laughing at the game early on. Although I will say, I have some numbers. We took seven shots from inside the danger zone. They took two. We took 10 shots from inside the box. They took five. So by expected goals, I've actually got it like 1.8 to 0.5 for Spurs. So looking back over the game, there were some big mistakes, but they actually did. They converted some relatively difficult chances. We've played worse than that. That's yes. Not necessarily a really positive statement, but we've played a lot worse than that this season. We've played much worse in more – I'd say the majority – that was a better-than-average Sherwood Spurs performance.
Well, I think looking at the game, I think two things strike me about that. I think the statistics do not capture – or cannot capture the Hugo Lloris suicide quotient, because Hugo Lloris' suicidal runs either – barely work out for him, or I feel like a lot of times there's been a defender who's barely able to clean up the mess, or we're playing Palace and they can't put it away. But on the flip side of that, it was just, this team doesn't know what to, I mean, Sherwood, I'm convinced he's not giving this team, he doesn't know how to prepare this team, because it's the same story, like I said at the beginning, we just didn't know what to do. We got unlucky and made some sloppy errors. And I think a lot of that's down to really bad coaching. And then these players are good enough where they can claw it back and start really getting goals against West Brom. I think we easily could have won this game even going down 3-0. I think we were a much better team after the 30-minute mark. And I think it's because we have actually assembled a pretty good squad that can put together a halfway decent performance with little to no assistance from the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think there's a clear pattern here where, and I've said this many times before, where Sherwood doesn't know what to do. So if it worked last time, he's going to put out the same team. And then there's no instruction, there's no plan. So the team spends 30 minutes sort of taking the pulse of the game and trying to figure out how to play together and how to play against this opposition. And once that 30 minutes rolls around, you know, eventually that the quality of the players starts to shine through. But before that, we're just a dysfunctional mess.
completely dysfunctional. I think it carries through the whole season that this team has not. They don't know how to deal with things in a certain way. And at least under Sherwood, and I'm not saying Sherwood's better than ABB by any stretch, even though I don't have a lot of respect for ABB, but at least Sherwood's giving them some rope to hang themselves with so they can, when the system's not working, they can start freelancing. Whereas under ABB, we've got a system and it's going to keep not working unless he changes it to another system that doesn't work, and it's going to keep happening. But at least now Erickson can frab for a while and just start creating goals. Adebayor can score some goals off his dong. You know, things can just start happening at least. And against bad teams, that's whatever. But, I mean, Michael, you were saying by your numbers, it looks like we were unlucky to lose this game, which is or tie this game, which is kind of hard to believe, sort of on the balance of play.
Yeah, I mean, we had five big chances by Opta. One of those is the penalty, and we missed all of them.
That sounds about right.
West Brom had three big chances. Those are their three goals.
Yeah, and to be fair to your statistics, those three chances looked pretty golden. Like, if they had missed them, I would have been shocked. And I guess the fact that we missed five similarly good chances, that doesn't surprise me at all, says something. But
yes. I mean, allowing three big chances to a plodding defensive side like West Brom is really bad.
I mean, the funny thing is, if West Brom, as good as I think we played after the 30th minute, I think West Brom just totally switching off also played a role in that. West Brom has put in decent performances against, they put in a decent performance against us earlier. And hell, they would have won that game if Erickson doesn't have an insane free kick, but
yeah, they should have beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. Yeah. I mean, they're not a bad team.
No, they're not.
They're not. It's just
they're bad enough that we should be beating them comfortably.
Just watch that Adebayor. I mean, that Adebayor penalty. I'm sort of at a loss for words. It's like I would like to actually just have a link permanently attached to a keyboard stroke that I could use whenever anyone complains about Soldado and just reply with that. Because, that is the value of a guy who can take penalties. Like, I understand Soldado has to do more. I understand it's been an underwhelming season. But at least he sinks those. I mean, there's value to that.
So, in the absence of Soldado and Adebayor, I mean, when I was at the bar watching this game, and as soon as Adebayor stepped up to take the penalty, everybody screamed out in horror, why are you letting this happen? He's horrible at penalties. You know, who would you guys have had take that instead of him?
Was Kane on the pitch at that point?
Yeah.
Yes.
Erickson.
Well,
I mean, come on. Just any time the ball is going to be at somebody's feet, it should be at Christian Eriksen's feet.
Yeah, that's hard to argue with. I mean, everything that we do well seems to come through him. Which isn't an accident.
I think, and this might sound dumb, I don't think we realize how good Christian Eriksen is. He's doing this, transitioning into a new league, under two horrible coaches. Seriously, AVB didn't know how to use him, or wouldn't use him. Sherwood is playing him, I mean, at least, say what you want about Sherwood, at least Sherwood understands that Eriksen needs the ball. Now, he thinks he needs it on the left wing, which is take another drink. But at least he understands that. But he's been played out of position or not at all year. He has not had a cohesive system to work with. These are all new teammates. I know it's been a year now. And he's done this. I think he's put together a better season than Ozil even before the injury set in. I think this guy's going to I think he's going to blow up in a year or two. I think he's going to be insanely good. And I was skeptical of him when we first got him because of the way he sort of flatlined at Ajax and didn't have a good Euros with the Denmark side. But I am all in on Eriksen now. That dude is, I think he's going to be world class in a year or two.
Michael, what do your stats say about Eriksen in relation to guys like Silva and Oscar and Coutinho and other guys of his ilk?
There was actually, I think, I'll just pass this one off. Ted Knutson at StatsBomb did a piece on Eriksson comparing him to precisely those guys. And basically, he's roughly their equal in every way.
And he's 21, being played out of position on a bad team.
Yep.
I mean, think about that. Think about that. Think of, oh, my God, you guys, he's so good. He's so good.
12 million pounds. I mean.
And it was a steal. And it was you know what? He said he has a secret dream. I think that secret dream is to play for Tottenham. And he deliberately flatlined over the last 2 years to get bought by Spurs. It's crazy. How did every scout in Europe miss this? I mean, even and Kevin, forgive me if I'm speaking out of turn here. I remember Kevin even being like, he's good. He's all right. He's kind of whatever. Like, I don't think any of us were like, we were more excited about the price than we were about the purchase, I think, when we got him.
Honestly, I'm not wrong often. I think I've been wrong once, and it was saying that I didn't want Christian Eriksen or wasn't excited about Christian Eriksen, and I will eat my humble pie gladly and take a second helping because this kid is unbelievable.
He built the team around him. I don't think that's and you know what? If he does become world class, he could be more important to our team than Bale was because – he'll play. I mean, he's not just going to score crazy goals. I mean, he will really. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you guys can chime in, but it's kind of like, I mean, if he turns into what Silva was for City, I mean, or is for City, I mean, a more attacking Modric or a Modric with goals in him, like, think about that. I mean, Modric, but can score. I mean, that's insane and ridiculous and makes me really happy.
Yeah, and the other thing I've been impressed with Eriksson is
the everything the, you've been impressed with. You mean?
Yeah, but the shit job he's been given. Oh, I'm not supposed to curse.
No, you can curse. No.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Well, the job he's been given, where he's got to cover the wing and help out Danny Rose, who's a disaster, and be central attacking constantly, having the attack run through him. And running back and forth between those two jobs, it's led to errors. It's an impossible job, but he has worked so hard. I mean, he has put in, you know, the character and the drive and all of that.
Did you say character?
Mm-hmm.
Character? Tim Sherwood's favorite thing in the world?
Exactly. Hashtagged it.
Hashtagged it. We need to find a way to quantify that in statistics. We'll have to make that a project next season. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say I think he pulled us into a draw in that game. I mean, he's just – Christian Eriksen's the best. Never leave us, Christian.
So leaving aside the Christian Eriksen love affair, I think the other person who dragged us into that game was Harry Kane.
Harry Kane. Well, he's a time traveler, so he has an unfair advantage over everyone else on the pitch.
That's true. But he was fucking incredible.
Harry Kane, what do your stats say about Harry Kane comparing him to some other comparable 20-year-old strikers out there? I mean, I think we forget about that with Kane. He's kind of like, I mean, I'm sort of failing at a sports comparison here, but I mean, I feel like we've been hearing his name forever, so we think he's like 24.
Yeah, he's like
sort of like Freddie Adu. Christian Eriksen.
Okay, all right.
He's like Freddie Adu, but not 35.
Oh, God.
Statistically, Kane has just played far too few minutes to really say much about him in terms of the numbers. I mean, the thing with Kane that worries me is that his best role is as a second striker, which is a role that there isn't a lot of room for in most modern football formations.
I'll say this about Kane. One thing that gives me some encouragement about him is, besides the fact that he's so young – and that he can develop.
Absolutely.
He might be, and I'm a relatively new Tottenham fan, he might be the most impressive Tottenham striker we've had in the air that I can think. I know Adebayor's been effective in the air, but I don't get that sense of power that I get from Kane, where he just sort of, I mean, not only can he hit it hard in the air, but he sort of dominates his area, I feel. I'm very impressed with Kane's aerial game.
I mean, we've had guys like, I mean, Berbatov, and then obviously Sheringham and Klinsmann. In recent history.
Well, let me put it this way. If you go look at any YouTube compilation of Klinsmann's highlights, there's a header. I think it's from his second game with Spurs. He puts that thing in the goal like a bullet, and he's going backwards when he does it. It's amazing. But I'm talking about, like, even Crouch had to cheat a little bit, where he was always, like, climbing guys like ladders, and he just never got called on it. I mean, Kane doesn't seem to do that.
Yeah. I mean, he seems to read the space very well. He seems to have sort of an understanding of the game, which I've appreciated.
Is that a new development? I feel like I didn't see, like, since the new year, he's been – I don't feel like I remember seeing this in his previous sort of appearances. Is that just me, or is that just a minute thing?
These past two games were his first two starts all season. I don't know if he's started games before in other competitions, but – I mean, he really hasn't gotten a ton of opportunities, and he's played games coming in on the left or wherever. But he definitely showed an ability to put himself into positions that are dangerous. You know, his finishing's been a little wayward, but I can chalk that up to nerves and youth and whatever. But his intelligence in reading the game and getting himself into areas he needs to be has been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
To Michael's concern about his role not being a thing anymore, I wonder how true that is. You look at the best teams in England, and we kind of see two striker systems coming back in vogue with Aguero and Negredo, or Aguero and Dzeko, with Sturridge and Suarez, RVP and Rooney to a much lesser extent. So I don't know. I think there might be room for him, like, a Harry Kane, Roberto Soldado strike partnership going forward.
At least against lesser teams. Or as a sort of last-minute strategy. Or not last-minute, but a secondary strategy we pull out later in games. Don't forget, I think he can be a solid second striker, 2B striker next season. But... is there anything particularly negative we want to dwell on? Danny Rose was terrible. Hugo Lloris.
Danny Rose, by the way, also missed two big chances.
Not a surprise. That guy's got a... I'd be fine with him if he wanted to be our backup left back next year. I think he's capable enough to do that, but he won't want to do that. Sell him. Get him out of here. Bring in a real left back. There's enough... any sort of deep reading of the transfer market should be able to find an affordable £10 million or less for a decent left back.
I want to see Sherwood have the balls to see what Friars is made of and give him the last four games of the season.
Why not? We're playing terrible teams the rest of the year.
And he's shown enough that to convince me that he could be good. I mean, even as a center back, when he came on for Kirkesh, who was also terrible, really terrible, Friars was playing basically as like a lone center back. Kabul was doing like a sort of right wing back thing. Naughton was roaming around.
Oh my god, this
and I think that was by design.
And that was when we were playing at our best.
That's my point. It's by design.
I think it worked out fine, but it was you had Friars being the only guy back against Vidra and Sessegnon, and he shut it down really, really well.
If Friars is our backup left back next year, I will be perfectly happy with that. I think he's shown a lot this year. I don't want to start the season with him as our left back, but I don't have a problem with him being our backup next year. I think that's fine, and especially because he can play center back in a pinch. I mean, Kirkesh, I would just hope that if we have a decent manager in who's in all gear, he'll improve, but he's old enough where this is probably what we're going to get with Kirkesh no matter what, and that makes me sad. This team is what it is. We're playing Chadley in center, which is not the dumbest thing in the world, but just like Eriksen on the left, there's better ways to use him. Especially after that Benfica game, I don't know what he's thinking, why you wouldn't just swap them, but go with God, Tim. Maximum Timpact, I suppose, would be the reason that we're doing that.
It's so frustrating because Chadley had such a good game against Benfica. It was far and away his best performance of the season, and it came from the left. Well, and since then, Sherwood has been like, meh, I don't think so.
Here's what I don't get about Chadley. It's the Gareth Bale principle applies there. I'm not saying he's Gareth Bale, but he is a very physical, fast, powerful left back or left winger who can overpower or outrun other teams, backs and defenders. Like, this is not hard. This is, I mean, and he's technically adept enough that he can create some other dangers, but it's like, why aren't we using him like that? He did it to Benfica. Benfica is better than at least a third of the Premier League. I mean, so because of things like this, we're talking about a new manager next year. Tim has dialed back his comments in recent weeks. I think we talked about this last week. It continued this week. He's far more circumspect and far less braggy than he's been. I think he knows the writing's on the wall, and I think he's going out for a graceful exit would be my guess. So lots of people are talking about who the next Spurs manager is going to be. Lots of them are talking crazy about it, including, Ben, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's, all do some cocaine and convince ourselves that Jurgen, Klopp is going to come here next year. How about it, guys? Michael, statistically, what are the odds of Jurgen Klopp managing Spurs next season?
I have numbers for this. Zero is
all right.
The number.
Take some cocaine and tell me what you think then, okay? I need to keep the dream alive for a few minutes.
Yeah, no, I mean, he is the dream. He's the, you know, bespectacled German dream. His what he's done with that Dortmund team is, you know, if someone's got – I don't know why there hasn't already been, you know, why – like the German Michael Lewis hasn't gone and written that Moneyball book, because they are – their budget is tiny and compared to the big boys, and they are just as good as Bayern, as Barca, as Real, and they have been for a couple of years now.
Well,
it's incredible.
How much
does Klopp have to do with that? Do you know?
My understanding is that – I mean, I haven't read this book that doesn't exist, but my understanding is that he is, you know, he is hugely about the tactics that are putting those players into the right positions, and whoever is buying the players is clearly doing it – is clearly getting in players that work with him, which means that he has to be involved in that.
The interesting thing about Klopp is I think – 20 years ago, pre-Wenger, or immediately post-Wenger, I think a team of the stature Spurs are at today, I think you could get him. But today, in today's world, where the Bundesliga is on the up, and England's sort of been exposed a little bit in terms of, or I think it's a little overdone in terms of big-time foreign managers coming to England. I don't think you see that as much anymore these days.
I mean, you're not getting the guy coming off of, you know, a year out from a Champions League final that was well-deserved on the back of his own merits to the sixth or seventh best team in England.
Not today. I think you could get it. Like I said, I think 20 years ago you might be able to get that, but that's given where football was back then. But no, Spurs are not going to get him, even if they were willing to spend what it would take to employ him. He's just – I'm not even sure if he'd go to Arsenal, which is what really terrifies me. Because I think he might spend more of Arsenal's money on better players and really construct a dangerous team there that Wenger has sort of been coaching with one hand behind his back all these years. But, you know, I'm not sure where Klopp would go. We didn't hear anything about him being linked with United last offseason, but a lot of that was because Ferguson sort of just wanted Moyes in there. But we also didn't hear him linked to Real, which was kind of interesting that, we didn't hear any serious links to Barca either. I hope he's Dortmund till he dies and just never leaves. And we don't have to deal with him in England, because that would suck bad.
Really, yeah, unfortunately, bad. Arsenal really sounds like a match made in heaven for him. I mean, they have a history of, you know, smart buys and young players and things like that. They are a sleeping giant in terms of finances. They're one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the biggest clubs in England. I think they would be a really attractive destination for him.
But the flip side of that is he's already going to Champions League's final. I mean, I think Michael's been talking about just how not far away they are from the top, what we usually think of as the top teams in the Champions League. I mean, if he wants to be another Champions League final, I think if he goes to Arsenal, it'll take at least 2 years to even think about being there, because he's going to have to rebuild that team. Dortmund, you know, he could do it next year, depending on how it all falls into place. You know, he's at a big team. He's at one of the biggest clubs in the world right now. He's bathed in one of the biggest clubs in the world. I don't think I've heard a lot about – I think everyone just assumes he'll go because Arsenal or United or whoever could pay him more money, but I haven't heard any rumblings about him leaving, and hopefully that doesn't happen, unless it's the Spurs, because he's a lifelong Spurs fan.
Yeah.
He's
not coming.
Wheeler Dealer Radio exclusive, that one.
Yeah, it is. It is. From our own delusional haze. Speaking of delusions, Ben posted an article this week, a counterfactual as to why Benitez might be a good thing for Spurs, and the commentariat followed him like sheep because they are easily led and deceived. Ben, why would Benitez not be terrible for Spurs?
Because I played my pan flute and everyone comes dancing. No, I think I made an excellent and well-thought-out argument for why Benitez would be a good hire.
You can't see me making a whacking motion with my hand right now, by the way, just FYI.
Look, I mean, first of all, I don't think he's going to leave Napoli for Spurs unless he has a real hankering to come back to England and prove a point to somebody. And let's be honest, given Rafa Benitez's personality, that's entirely possible. But yeah, I think he's a good manager. He has, you know, he won two league titles in Spain with Valencia, who are one of the bigger clubs in Spain, but they're still not Real Madrid and Barcelona. You know, since 2001, he is the only person to break that duopoly in Spain. Atletico Madrid may have something to say about it come the end of the season, but until then, my statistic is accurate, and I'm going to stand by it. But no, so he has shown that he is capable of taking a club that is not the richest team, not even close to the richest team in the league, and turning it into an incredibly dangerous side that can win a title.
Well, nothing you say is incorrect. I would like to point out this was against pre-Ricard Barcelona. And this was also against we don't care about anything but Europe Real Madrid, who is still they are still forces to be conquered. But I would like to point out,
but they were still winning every single championship.
But it's also not the duopoly it is today. But you are
it's
correct.
Not,
it's still an accomplishment.
It still would have been like winning the league with Liverpool, or I guess Arsenal, when Chelsea was a thing, which is a huge accomplishment, you know. And his Champions League victory with Liverpool was nothing short of miraculous, because they weren't a very good team. You know, he's a very sound tactician. He has a wonderful reputation for his European knockout abilities. That's well deserved. He's doing very well at Napoli. You know, he's really good at, and he's the only guy that we've looked at or are looking at or even thinking about who's managed a team that's kind of in Spurs' financial position relative to the league. Yeah, we can get Louis van Gaal, and he's done wonders with Ajax winning a Champions League there. That's great. And, you know, winning with Barcelona. But those are huge teams. And, you know, Mauricio Pochettino, who's done really well with Southampton, but that's a really shitty team financially and otherwise. Benitez is a guy who has made his career off doing good things with teams in our position. And so, in that respect, I think he's a relatively low-risk, high-reward option.
I would, Michael. Do you have what do you think about Benitez?
I mean, I was just gonna say that. I mean, the thing with Benitez is that if you look just at his results, there's very few places where you'd go, man, those results are not good enough. You know, he's got Napoli in line for probably the Champions League playoff. With Chelsea, he pulled that he won a European trophy and got third place. Better underlying stats than they had under Di Matteo. You know, that Liverpool Champions League run that happened during the period of time when Liverpool were, you know, there was a possibility that what Tom Hicks had done to that team was going to take them out of the Premier League entirely. And he kept them running. I mean, it's an impressive career. I don't think that he is, you know, he's not somebody you dream on. He's not. He's not Van Gaal. He's not Klopp. But as you were saying, he's got results.
All right, let me bring this all crashing back to reality. sometimes, and I'm not saying that he's, I don't think he's as bad as the popular perception, but sometimes the popular perception exists for a reason. And I think it does exist for a reason with Benitez. You look at Benitez, I think, first of all, he does have an impressive record. I don't want to dispute that. What he did with Valencia, what he did with Liverpool, was very impressive. He's doing a decent job at Napoli. I would say Napoli is 12 points off second place Roma in an incredibly weak Serie A right now. So let's not give him.
But Roma are on fire this year.
They were on fire this year. Let's be clear. My point is this is a Serie A without any like Fiorentina's like 20 points off them or something ridiculous, like at least 10. And AC, like Milan has fallen off a cliff. Inter's fallen off a cliff. I mean, it's a very weak Serie A. But no, you're right. He's doing a decent job in Napoli. He's going to get him in the Champions League next year. But you look at Liverpool. Everyone forgets what he did in the 2005 was very impressive. And then everyone forgets he spent a lot of money for 2 years. He got Fernando Torres at the height of his game and paid a lot of cash for him. That was not a poor team that he took back to the Champions League in 2007. I know the Hicks and Gillette thing started going in, but he was also making poor decisions. Gareth Barry and Xabi Alonso, which I've heard people explain away, but still.
Gareth Barry did go to Man City at their height of their buying power. It's not like he was a crazy.
For Xabi Alonso, and he went to City at the height of their we need to buy people. Like he went when Adebayor went there and all, you know, like he. I think that's still crazy. But my problem with Benitez is, Ben, in your piece, you wrote a lot about if we can nullify the things that make him a crazy person, which to a lesser extent is how he deals with the media and the press and the public, but to a much greater extent is his spotty transfer record. If we can stop him from doing that, he'll be fine. Well, he got fired over disagreeing with transfers at Inter, which he might have been right, but he took about the most suicidal way of dealing with it.
They bought him nobody. So, they were coming off of a fluke Champions League victory with an aging team, and they said to Benitez, we'll support you in the transfer market, and then they didn't.
Here's my problem with that.
Now look at Inter.
I will say my argument about results, I helpfully skipped over his Inter run. I mean, you can explain that away, but he did not do well at Inter, and he got sacked, you know, at a 6-5-4.
Here's my problem. He needed guys there, and yes, he did not have a good run of results at Inter, and some of that wasn't his fault. That was an old-ass team, and Jose Mourinho got out just in the nick of time. But he handled that in about the worst way possible, and we don't have a chairman who's generally like, cool, man, do whatever you want. So unless he was trying to get fired, I don't trust him to deal with Levy, or I don't think he'll be able to deal with Levy.
Well, I think if we bring him in, it's kind of with that expectation. I mean, Levy's the guy, and everybody knows who Levy is and what Levy does. And I think, A, we're not in a position where we need to buy a lot of players. I mean, we have a very strong team. What we need is somebody who can coach these players into a cohesive unit, which I think Benitez can do. But in the long term, in terms of his spotty transfer record...
Ben, could you punctuate these with fact?
Fact. If we keep Baldini or bring in another director of football and keep transfers directly out of Benitez's hands, then you remove that weakness from the equation.
You're assuming,
and all you have left is his crazy media personality, which is undeniable. But
I feel like this has sort of gotten to a point where we are discussing issues that have been raised by a rumor that has actually no evidence behind it. And I think that there is a possibility if Benitez were a possibility, it would have to be a possibility to work with Daniel Levy, which, you know, once this becomes an actual rumor, we'll start to learn a little bit about whether that would work, what people think about it.
I feel like
we're sort of getting down a rabbit hole that is, you know. Whatever assumptions you put in, you can get something out of it.
Yeah, well, we're getting four steps into the fantasy. If Scarlett Johansson answered my calls, and if I took her to this really cool hole in the wall bar, and then this really cool band was playing, then she might want to call me back. You know, it's like, it's not going to happen either way. I mean,
Well, there's no perfect scenario where Scarlett Johansson calls you back. I'm going to break that to you gently.
Well, there's the possibility that she's actually an alien sent to murder everybody.
Or a government secret agent. I think I've also just sort of obliquely compared Scarlett Johansson to Rafa Benitez. And on that note, I'd like to get as far away from this conversation as humanly possible.
To anyone capable of Photoshop out there listening, please make that happen.
Fact. That would be awful. God. Oh. I almost want to stop the podcast and scrub my brain with steel wool now. So, yes, those are the manager rumors that have been floating around. Pochettino has also been discussed this week, but we sort of talked about that on the podcast last week. I stand by he was mediocre at Espanyol, and I don't want him at Spurs.
Wait, Michael, counter that. I know you have talked about this before.
I mean, I honestly don't have a lot to say about the Espanyol thing. I mean, I find Pochettino interesting for a couple of reasons. One, his team at Southampton plays huge numbers of through balls, but they have a really low conversion rate. And I wonder if he's playing tactics that would work better with with sort of forward players who can move better than Ricky Lambert, with the kind of quality of attacking players he could get at Spurs. He's also got, I think, I find it kind of fascinating. He's got this real Bielsa lineage. He was Bielsa's sort of ball playing center half in Argentina with, I think, Newell's Old Boys. So there's an interesting lineage there. There's enough in his there are markers in his record that suggest to me that he could be really, really good at the next level.
Well, at following Bilbao for a few years now, I would be nervous about anyone connected to Bielsa.
But Bielsa's problems aren't with his tactics; it's with Bielsa.
Yes, he's a crazy person.
No one wants the actual Bielsa. But if you can get somebody who has an understanding of what Bielsa thinks and does, and isn't Bielsa,
well, that would be something. I still think we'd be hiring the Spanish Big Sam. Well, not Big Sam, but the Spanish Roberto Di Matteo. Oh, wait. So, moving on. We've got some more rumors this week, mostly coming out that Baldini might be on the chopping block this offseason. Michael, thoughts?
I mean, it's just so hard to evaluate exactly what a director of football does in between having somebody like Levy on the business and contract and negotiation side and having, a manager like AVB who it sounds like at least was making whatever demands he was making. I'm probably a crazy person. I still like most of our transfers this last offseason. I still think that Eric Lamella is excellent. We discussed how amazing Christian Eriksen is. I don't think Nasser Chadli is now showing that, he was, what, 8 million? I mean, he's looking like a good buy. There's a lot to like in what we did. I still, think that Roberto Soldado is a good player. So, and I also think that the director of football model is obviously the way to go. It's crazy to think that a manager can be in charge of all the players and all the tactics and still be scouting 15, 20 different leagues in Europe.
Michael, how's the manager supposed to run his team if he's not doing everything at the club? We can't have water boys filling it up. How's the manager going to know what they're drinking? Come on, don't be crazy.
It's true. Herbert Chapman did it this way, so everyone else has to do it this way too.
Here's the thing about Baldini. I agree with you. I think those were all good targets. I think a lot of our failure this year, some of it's down to the players. Soldado's form is whatever else you want to say has not been acceptable. At least some of that, if not all of it's down to the player. I think these players came into a system that was not. You and I have gone around on this in the writer's room, Michael. I think ABB's system was broken from Jump Street. If nothing else, it never had a plan B that worked. But they've come into a system that either was broken or broke, and then they had Sherwood. I agree that most of the targets were good, but even if they weren't, what I like about Baldini is we targeted players and players the caliber of Soldado before the season started. I think we've never been able to land a striker of his caliber. I think we can sort of agree with that in recent years. And we signed them. We made clear, effective steps to signing these guys. We have not done that. We did not dither on any of our targets this year. We got them done as ITK cell phone photos of Baldini and Valencia proved. We made targets. We did it. I like that. I think Baldini, even if he's just taking directions from Levy, oh, go get player X and make it happen, I'm fine with that. The reason I might be fine with his firing is, by all accounts, Baldini was AVB's guy. There are rumors that AVB wanted him last offseason. So if he was really tied into, like, AVB and, like, doing what AVB wanted to do, then I don't have a problem getting rid of him for a guy who's more sort of up Levy's alley. But we're not going to know that. That's an inside the club thing. It is what it is. I think we need a director of football who can target these guys and have quick, effective negotiations for them. Whether that happens when we're not spending Real Madrid's money, I don't know. But I would like to hang on to him, unless for some reason he was just part of the AVB project to an extent where it doesn't make sense to keep him around. Ben?
I mean, I think unless he has, like, a completely untenable relationship with Daniel Levy, you have to keep him. I mean, you look at the players he signed. I mean, Christian Eriksen alone warrants him sticking around. I mean, that was a buy that nobody else made, that he made, or that Levy made through him. But we got him for an absurdly cheap price, and now he's kicking ass at Spurs. But on top of that, you know, like you said, Soldado maybe hasn't been great this season. Fine. The fact that we got a guy coming off of a career like Soldado's to come to Spurs is huge. And that really can't be overstated. We have tried time and time again to get guys like Sergio Aguero, even Loic Remy.
Diego Forlan.
Giuseppe Rossi. I mean, we have put feelers out and tried to sign strikers in the past. Yeah, exactly. We've made moves for these guys, and nothing has come off. So whether Soldado was the right guy or not, I don't know or care. The fact that he got him speaks volumes to me about the value Baldini brings to this club. You know, and Eric Lamela, yes, he's had a shitty season for all kinds of reasons, but Eric Lamela was one of the highest-rated young players in Europe. And the fact that he came to Tottenham Hotspur instead of somewhere a lot bigger and fancier is impressive. And that speaks well to Baldini's acumen. I mean, yes, he had the Roma connections, which helped, but whatever. Roma's a great team this year. Maybe we can poach some more good guys. Maybe we can bring Gervinho to Spurs. I don't know.
No, I don't want that octopus head guy here.
But you're right. I think if he was AVB's guy and some of that lingering AVB problems is kind of tainting him, then, yeah, it might be time to let him go. But I don't want to let him go at the expense of the entire director of football system. If we let Baldini go, we have to bring in somebody better.
Yeah, and I mean, and just, you know, I was basically nodding along the whole time that you guys were talking, which makes fantastic podcast.
Well, we're so right. It's hard not to do anything else.
Exactly. But I mean, I think that the idea, the fact that he went and spending that much money is kind of hard.
For Tottenham it is.
right. And he went and targeted players. He got those transfers done. And I think that, you know, while shifting off a manager very quickly, you know, to some degree, managers are necessarily short term. There's something about what football managers do. There's something about what managers in all sports do that hardly ever works over the long term. But yeah. At the same time, if you look at sort of, you know, general manager, director of football positions, those are people who stay on, who put together a vision and can make it last. I mean, obviously the great managers are also people who can do that, but you see that more often in the director of football. I think giving up on a director of football after a year is a sort of worrisome thing managerially in terms of what it says about the institution of Tottenham.
Like I said, the only reason it's acceptable to me is if he's so tied to AVB and what he was trying to do. And we're not going to know this. You'd have to be in the club to know this. Given that he's still here, I mean, I think when he offered to resign, English people on my Twitter timeline were all up above about that. I feel like in American sports, we see that, like, when a guy is tied to a failure, he offers to resign and the team just doesn't accept it. I feel like I see that all the time in American sports. So I wasn't too plussed by that. I think he'd be gone if he was ABB's guy. Now, if LVG comes in, or who – oh, my God, I actually called him LVG. If Van Hall comes in and demands another football director of football, then, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But I would like to think that Baldini is continental enough that we would keep him around.
Yeah, for all the Levy out nonsense, if he scraps the director of football system – that will worry me a lot more than his managerial appointments and firings.
But will it worry you more than StubHub?
No. That's a great evil that's plaguing our game.
Oh, true, true. Now, speaking of Baldini, one of his biggest signings, we just were talking about him, was Eric Lamela. One of the most coveted young players in Europe. Had a great season with Roma last year. Has not really had the chance to play much for Spurs this year. AVB wasn't playing him. A lot of ITK and rumor mongering was going out that he wasn't an AVB hire. He didn't like him. Maybe he wasn't performing on the training. Like, no one really knows. But AVB wasn't playing him. It looked like Sherwood was set to just let him go. And then he got hurt. And he's been hurt all the second half of the year. Sherwood's latest comments either belie that he's still too hurt or he's getting up to speed in such a way that Sherwood's not going to get to know what to do with him before the season's over, which is, to be fair to Sherwood, fine. I mean, if Sherwood was here next year, he should be playing him. But, you know, that there's a point, I think, to what he's saying, even though I'm not thrilled with it. There's a lot of rumors going around about Lamela and us throwing him, sort of just cutting our losses next season. Unless Lamela is just a crazy person that we want out of here, I don't see that happening. We would take a loss on him almost assuredly, despite what some insane people in our commentariat think. Michael, you had some analysis of Lamela that you wanted to share.
Yeah, I mean, first off, my Eric Lamela theory is that he hasn't been fit all year. I mean,
since December.
He's been injured since December, and if you look at what he's apparently injured with, which is everything, it suggests that he wasn't – I mean, it explains why he was so unimpressive for so long. If he was not 100% physically and he was trying to push through, that explains why he didn't really, you know, show what he can do in almost any of the Europa League games except for that one Anji match.
And the Sheriff match.
Sheriff.
But that's Sheriff. I mean, it's Sheriff. Yeah. But the thing is, don't forget, he took a year or two to bed in at Roma.
Yep.
Go ahead.
My one concern is that a guy who loses a year to injury, that is the sort of at this age, you know, that is the sort of thing that could suggest some physical issues down the road. But that's my only concern with him. The one stat I was playing around with here was I was looking at key passes from the danger zone, non-cross key passes within the danger zone. So he assisted a shot from the central area of the 18-yard box, not with a cross. And the only players in Italy in 2012, 2013 who had more non-cross danger zone key passes were Tati, Hamžík, Cassano, Vucinic, and he was tied with Insigne. My Italian pronunciation is amazing. And
you nailed it.
This year, you know, if we're looking at, you know, who are players at that level in the Premier League, you're looking at Hazard, you're looking at Silva, you're looking at Suarez and Ozil. And you're looking at Peter Crouch, so it's an amazing statistic.
Peter Crouch being the outlier, being my
hilarious and well-timed punchline. But nonetheless, I mean, these are elite passing numbers, and he scored 15 goals.
Two things. One, I think I've seen some comparisons to Hazard in the same year on the 2012-2013 season that were very favorable. And I know you take that with a little bit of grain of salt because Serie A and England aren't the same league, but I think you're right. I think he is clearly capable of being an elite player. Two, have we ever seen Vucinic and Peter Crouch in the same place? Because they might be the same person with hair dye.
I think Crouch is about 8 feet taller than Vucinic.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And they do have basically the same face, though. So there's something there.
Yeah, and they've both been with women who weren't Abby Clancy in the last couple months. So I guess they have that going for them, too, which is crazy for one of them.
Sick burn.
It is the sickest of burns. So now that we've gotten the intelligent part of the podcast out of the way.
Wait, before we go to the mailbag.
Oh, do we have something else we want to address?
Yeah, Michael brought up a statistic to me before we got going. Some interesting through ball numbers that I think are worth sharing.
Yeah, so I was
throwing
looking
balls around in this podcast, Ben. So
yeah, so I think that this has a lot to do with management. But there has, for Spurs this season, there is only one player who has attempted more than one through ball every 360 minutes. So that's every four games.
Who do you think it is?
Tom Carroll.
he's going to be playing in he's not going to be playing in the game this weekend because Holtby. He's on loan to Fulham.
It's Holtby, who is terrible, by the way. Holtby is awful, and none of you can convince me otherwise.
Yeah, he's attempted four times more through balls per 90 minutes than anyone else on Spurs. It's at 0.8 per 90, which is not at all an elite number, but no one else does it ever. I mean, it says I think it says more about what a mess the attacking system has been all year, but it does say this is something that Lewis Holtby does. He had big through ball numbers last year.
The thing about Lewis Holtby,
get a system that works. I mean, you want somebody who's playing those balls, you know.
And you would like to think Eriksen would be doing that if we were, you know, playing him in his natural position. My completely unscientific view of Holtby, which I have elucidated many times, is I just think he is impressive in cameo appearances for us. So he'll give us a good 45 minutes. And then we'll waste four starts on him trying to get something that looks like that out of him. And he'll be completely just blah and wasteful and do nothing but run around a lot in those next four appearances. And it's just his cameos just sort of sustain the amount of chances we're going to give him.
I'm going to tell you right now, besides Christian Eriksen, Lewis Holtby is going to be our best player next season. If we get a good manager, I stand by that.
Are you smoking crack instead of cigarettes?
Lewis Holtby has been at the heart of Fulham's recent revival. Holtby was phenomenal at Schalke and phenomenal for Germany's under-21s. Lewis Holtby is a very good player, and if he gets a coach who knows how to use him, he's going to be really fucking good.
Here's my challenge about that, though. How's he going to do on a team that's not built around him?
It doesn't matter.
Right. Schalke wasn't built around him. He just needs a team that is built.
Well, right. That is fair. I mean,
his
we
big
seen
season was at Mainz when he was on loan from Schalke before he went back there, and that was where he broke out. And it was certainly not built around a loan player.
Well, you're right about he hasn't played for a real manager at Spurs yet, so I will concede that. But I'm still just I think Lewis Holtby's future is in social media management and not football, or at least not top-level English football.
English football.
Topless English football. That one's for you, Bricks. Oh, wait, she doesn't like Holtby. Never mind. Let's take some questions from the commentariat and bring the intellectual level of this podcast down a notch. Let's see. I'm going to start with OutZen, who asked, what would your Mount Rushmore of Tottenham legends be? Ben.
I think, obviously, Bill Nick is the George Washington, and then Danny Blanchflower is the centerpiece of that double-winning side, and then who liberated the slaves?
It doesn't have to be. It's
Tim
four.
Sherwood.
Assuming
the slaves are our youth players, then Tim Sherwood.
Wow, this got real awesome.
It got political.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yep, that's another hot take on Wheeler Dealer Radio. What's your strong third take?
So actually, I will say Glenn Hoddle. And for a recent guy, I will go Gareth Bale.
I think the first three are kind of inarguable on that. I think Bill Nick has to be on there. I think Blanche Flower, it's hard not to put him on there. I think Hoddle has to be on there. I would say probably...
Oh, you know what?
Ardealis would be the last guy I would put on there.
I'm sorry. I take off Gareth Bale at Ledley King, unquestionably.
There you go. It's a modern guy. I would do Blanche Flower, Bill Nick. You know what? No, I'll do some different guys for you just for the sake. I do Greaves. I do Hoddle. I would do Ardealis, and I would do Gascoigne would be my Mount Rushmore.
The one guy I think gets passed over, and I mean I think calling Bill Nick George Washington kind of gets at this is Arthur Rowe.
Yes.
I mean it was his push and run football. That's where Bill Nick, you know, that was a big part of his schooling, and it was a big part of where Vic Buckingham came from, which then, you know, This is the lineage of Ajax, of Barca, of total football.
Ooh, you're so fancy going into our history. Speaking of Arthur Rowe, there is if you're a Tottenham fan, you really owe yourself a few minutes to do this. If you go onto YouTube, you do a search for the BBC did a program for Tottenham's 100th anniversary in the early 80s. And at the very end of it, literally, it's like if you just watch the last 2 minutes, it's a 22-minute video. If you watch the last 2 minutes of it, the last two guys they interview are Bill Nick and Arthur Rowe. And that's where the famous Bill Nick, I'm a Tottenham man quote comes from. But there's this really touching moment that actually sort of does make you tear up a little bit. They ask Arthur Rowe, who's this really old man at that point, what it meant to be associated with Tottenham. And he almost... like in this very British way, he just almost breaks down entirely on camera and then sort of collects himself and gives this very understated, dignified answer. And it's really
stiff upper lip, mate.
But you really, I mean, if you're a Tottenham fan, you should really go look at it. It's very touching and it's pretty incredible. If you know, we'll never see much of Arthur Rowe's Tottenham teams, but it's, you know, I think it shows you how much the club meant to him and how much he did for the club. But, But Michael, so you're Mount Rushmore. I assume Rowe would be on there for you.
Yeah, I mean, this is a question that I mean, my knowledge of my sort of emotional connection to the history of Tottenham is more sort of notional and conceptual.
It's all like numbers.
But I mean, I think that. I think you got that. You've mostly nailed the obvious ones. I mean, I think you have to have Brand Flower on there. I think that, you know, it's kind of weird to put two managers on there. On the other hand, Bill Nick was also a player for Rowe, so you can kind of put him on there in a half player role. I think the one guy I would want to talk about a little bit in the modern era is I think that we have to mention Modric. I mean, that was the guy. I think there's so many people who in sort of my generation of sort of coming to Spurs fandom recently for whom watching Modric play was just a huge part of what made us want to watch Spurs.
Yeah. He was
unquestionably.
It's kind of interesting with Modric. I don't know if you guys are the same way, cause I'm not as sort of tactically attuned as a lot of the masthead, but sort of when you get into Tottenham, I think it took you a little bit to sort of appreciate Modric. Like, you don't get it right away. It's only once you sort of like committed to the team, you're like, oh man, he's so good. I think the guy that we've left off that sort of, if we're going with modern guys and it's sort of his own fault, it's Robbie Keane. I mean, he was, along with Ledley, maybe one of the only good things about that team for a long time. I mean, I guess Carrick was on those teams too. But, I mean, Keane was the highlight of a lot of Tottenham teams. And the reason a lot of American fans are Tottenham fans. And he didn't do himself any favors with his, you know, boyhood club thing. But I think he's always going to be remembered for Spurs when he retires. And I think he probably doesn't get the credit he deserves.
I think that's fair.
Yes.
It's unfortunate for him. That our best seasons with Keane also had Berbatov, who was just better than Keane, but
they both made each other so good, and I think
they did. Their strike partnership in that 2006, 2007, and then 2007, 2008 seasons was phenomenal. But Keane was there for the long haul, or at least it seemed to be. And, yeah, he really kind of seems to be a forgotten man these days, which is really unfortunate.
Well, I think – I do think the fact – the two things I think hurt his legacy are the – he left us for bigger – he tried to leave us for bigger clubs, and he did the whole boyhood club thing twice with Celtic and Liverpool. And then he sort of like – when we were making the Champions League and becoming a top four contender, he kind of really became like a pain – like just – like the kind of guy you saw on the pitch. He was kind of like Jermaine Genus, where you're just like, oh, him at that point. And it was just, you know, it didn't do his legacy any favors, which is a shame. But yeah, you know, I mean, we'll always have that football ramble story about him spitting on the ground of a bar when he was hitting on a girl. So I suppose we'll have that. Next question from Reno Wallabout. I know he likes hearing me say his name. Assuming Sunderland, Cardiff, and Norwich are going down, he's basing that on their
Norwich. Come on.
Oh my God. Norwich are going down. He's basing that on a schedule difficulty. Which, if any, of their players would you poach for Spurs? Michael, who would you take from any of those teams?
I mean, honestly, one problem is that there's not that much that we need, but it's honestly kind of the null set right there. And I mean, one thing we were discussing earlier is obviously everyone's going to say Caulker. And on the one hand, you know, if you can get a depth center back for reasonably cheap who's English and young, hey, you know, got nothing against it. But Cardiff have been awful defensively. Awful. And been there week in, week out.
Yep.
And it's, I mean, if we're going to say if we're going to think of him as more than just a capable depth signing who also counts as, you know, academy or whatever it is for the numbers, it's hard for me to get that excited about it.
I'm sure there are people who watch more Cardiff than me who will say that, oh, it's the system, it's the team, it's his partners.
No, A, nobody watches more Cardiff than you because nobody watches Cardiff. And B, they're just bad. And Stephen Caulker has played every single minute of their season and hasn't been good. Yeah, he scores a lot of goals from corners, which is awesome. But if that's your metric for a good center back, then there's bigger problems we need to address in this conversation.
So we're saying his biggest skill is that he's tall. I would like to point out that I take no small satisfaction from this. After our own Ed Francis's, we just lost our next Ledley King article, which I thought was an overreaction. I did not realize it was an exaggeration to the degree this season has borne out. Maybe he's better than Kirakesh, but hasn't been that great for Cardiff this year. I might take him for depth, but it would be due to sort of lingering assumptions of him based on rather than anything we've seen this year. God, I don't know if there's anyone else I'd take off of those teams.
If we were a worse team, I'd take Robert Snodgrass, but we're not.
But we do play Arsenal twice a year.
I know. Yeah. I like Key on Sunderland, but he's a Swansea player. Barini.
Barini, but he's
Liverpool
on loan.
Player.
Right, yeah, nobody. Would you take nobody.
Him? Would you take Barini over any of our strikers right now? I mean, you might, maybe if we get rid of Adebayor, he would replace
No,
him.
But I would take him. If we could sell Chadley for more than we paid for Barini, I think that'd be a good swap.
Fair enough.
I think those are comparable players.
And Barini's versatility is really valuable. I mean, he can play that false nine. He can play wide. He can play behind a striker. He can do a lot of things.
But can he play defensive midfielder?
Oh my God!
No, he's not a big lad like Chadley. What you put him on the wing and have him get them crosses in?
Yeah.
So would anyone take a punt on Van Volswinkel?
No, God no. He's had one shot on target this season. No, two shots on target this season.
Do you remember when we posted some article about, like, and I think it was before we got, because they locked him up at the end of last year, right? I don't think
he was an early signing, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember we posted some, like, if how come Norwich can get Van Volswinkel and we can't land a single decent striker? And the article's point stood, but it's still amusing to me.
I'll let the record show that I didn't want Van Volswinkel ever, so. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, he's not been, and it's tempting to write it off too.
I might, if we needed a depth signing at striker, I might think about bringing Gary Hooper home, but I don't know.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. I mean, maybe I've missed something not watching enough Norwich, but like, is he markedly better than Kane for what it would cost to get him here?
No, not at all.
No, I mean, he's different than Kane.
But, yes.
I mean, if you want somebody to throw into cup games and he's going to score goals, meh.
But that's what Kane is.
Whatever that noise you just made, that's exactly how I feel.
Bailout wants to know if we have any names for our new stadium. I'll play in a stereotype. I want to name it StubHub just to watch the world burn. I just think that would be funny, and I would enjoy it. The fan outcry over it. Guys?
Tim Sherwood Arena.
Oh, you're even more nihilistic than I am. Jesus.
the naming rights center. Just give us some cash and we'll buy players with it, and we'll sell out the club's legacy to whoever gives us cash.
Also, the Cubs' legacy.
And by the way, that whole thing was the name of the stadium. That was the and it's still going. This is still the name of the stadium.
I always thought it would be funny.
That's still the name of the stadium. Keep going.
I always thought it would be funny if I was like disgustingly rich. I would like, other than like buying a team like the Red Sox and running them into the ground, just because I think it would make me happy. Like, just buy the name of another team's stadium and just name it whatever it was, like piss that team. So like, you buy the rights to the Emirates and you just call it White Hart Lane 2 or something like that, or like Tottenham are better than you stadium. So in that scenario, I guess Piers Morgan can name us Highbury or something, which is a terrible too awful to think. Going to another question. From Bailout, which I hate to do two questions for the same person, but I think this is good. If you had to spend the money we did last summer on players, given the knowledge you have now, who would you choose? We've talked about this a little bit tonight. Ben, thoughts?
Okay, so if I had to spend the money again, I would still buy Lamella and I would still buy Eriksen. Absolutely. Well, maybe if I could get El Shaarawy, I would have bought him instead of Lamella on the back of last season. But I'm fine with Lamella. I think he's great, and I think he's going to be great. I would stick with Soldado because I think when he gets a good manager, I think he's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have bought Chadli. I think that was a kind of Moneyball signing when Bale still looked like staying.
I think that was totally Bale's going to play in the center for us next year. We need a guy on the left.
Right.
And we didn't think Townsend was going to do it.
Yeah, and I think in hindsight, I would rather have Townsend on the left than Chadli, and what Chadli brings to the table really isn't enough for me to want to buy him. And I wouldn't buy Paulinho because Paulinho is the worst. And I might not buy Kapu. I do agree that, I mean, we haven't really played Kapu or Sandro a whole lot. But if we had a competent manager who was going to play Sandro, then I think Kapu was a very reasonable depth signing for that position, and I'm okay with it. So I'll leave Kapu.
I'll agree with you about Kapu, and I hate to be this guy. His attitude worries me. What we heard and what we heard as rumors and what we heard as fact both would worry me for a depth signing guy, and I might not take him in retrospect.
I mean, he was really, really good in France.
Oh,
to take
was.
Nothing away from Kapu. Like, yeah.
Knowing
it's
what I know now,
guy
though.
His age, a depth signing for a team as mediocre as we have been, that's got to hurt.
I mean, the problem with Kapu is that, I mean, yes, he backs up Sandro if you absolutely have to play a true DM in the center. But you can also just play another system when you don't have Sandro. If you have a manager who's capable of making some changes.
Whoa.
See, I don't know.
Crazy.
I think I would love to see Kapu play against bad teams and play a kind of 4-1-4-1 system, because I think Kapu is excellent defensively, and he has really, really good smarts and really good long-range passing. And he's a very good guy to just kick that attack forward from winning the ball in midfield in a way that Sandro might not be. And I don't know. I think he's a very good player, and I think he really hasn't gotten a chance to shine. But
I just want to toss out a name of the guy we should have signed. Kevin Strootman.
Yeah, I mean, we
signed for roughly Paulinho money.
I'm not certain.
And he was. I mean, he's a playmaker. He's a hard worker. He's everything that we've needed in midfield this year. He would have worked with AVB.
Yeah, and I think you're right.
And he would have brought creativity.
I think you sign Strootman over Paulinho, and then we're talking. But I think Capu still has a role to play.
Oh yeah, no, I just wanted to say Strootman because I thought it was a smart answer.
I'll tell you the thing about Strootman is why he didn't end up at United is I don't understand it. Like they're willing to spend money on Bale. I don't like why.
Yeah,
United
they spent
wasn't...
money on Fellaini. Yeah, they absolutely should have bought Strootman. Yeah. But I think they thought Carrick was going to be better.
Who knows? Maybe Roma just had a line on Strootman. I mean, who knows?
Something had to be horribly wrong at United last offseason. I mean, I don't think there's any way of explaining what happened there without imagining awful, awful organizational dysfunction.
Yeah, I think they were just so focused on Bale. I think they were really focused. By all accounts,
no, I don't think that's the case at all. I think when they lost Ferguson, they lost everybody with him in their back room, and they appointed that Woodward guy to run their transfers, and he fucking choked. You know, he pursued targets like Herrera and Strootman and whoever else and got nobody.
He couldn't get Alcantara.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because it seemed like that was nailed on for a while.
Exactly. Yep. That was their problem.
But hey, Kevin's not on this podcast. We don't have to talk about Manchester United, guys.
Yeah.
So let's go through. There's a quick question from Sandro's Hard Tackle. Who is the worst player to score against us this season? It's Catermull. There's no one's going to debate that, right?
Rena Wallabout's answer in the comments was Kabul, which is a pretty good answer. But yeah, Catermull undoubtedly.
I just don't see how how did Lee Catermull score a goal on us?
Now we are all sad.
Yeah, we are. So final question. This is from Neil Pearl or N Pearl for Spurs. Would you sell your Spurs fandom for $1 million or any amount? And if you did, would you stop following the EPL or become a fan of a different team or otherwise league?
What do you say, Greg?
I hate myself too much.
$1 million.
The Catholic in me enjoys suffering. So.
This question just makes me sad. This question just makes me imagine this sort of like this sick rich person,
like Michael Douglas, in a city jersey, just walking up to you with a briefcase full of money.
Right, but with some sort of amazing surveillance network allow him to see the moment that I just flip on a Spurs game and get a little bit happy. I mean, taking away, a part of you that no matter how ridiculously you developed it, is then a part of you and just sort of selling it. All of that makes me sad.
It's very sad.
Yeah, I think my answer is I absolutely would. If someone gave me $5 million, I could live off the interest for the rest of my life, and I'd be fine. But I can't do that. Like, I'm not at a place where I can separate being a Spurs fan from who I am as a person, which is an unfortunate testament to who I am as a person. But I couldn't do it. I would do it if I could, but I can't.
It's funny.
Fandom is so deeply, wonderfully, deeply irrational and human.
Oh, it's great. When I was in New York last year, Michael, I was watching after a Spurs game. I went with a friend of mine to a general soccer bar, and I got accosted by some two idiot Arsenal fans, one of which was wearing a Kolo Touré jersey, which should tell you everything you need to know. But they're singing songs about, like, Spurs fans getting stabbed in Rome, and I've don't know any personally, other than over the internet, any Spurs fans in England. But, you know, it was offending me. It's like, it's this irrational, like, yep. You know, and I'm more than, like, I care about my fellow man. It's like, you know, you feel part of something. And it's wonderfully irrational, and it's part of who I am at this point in my life, even though I have not been a Spurs fan in the way I've been, say, an Orioles fan my whole life. But, you know, it's part of who I am now. And, like, I can't imagine separating that from who I am until we sign David Moyes as our manager, and in which case I'll see you suckers later. I'm going to go root for Chelsea.
Yeah. There's some Dave Barry line about how you love a sports team. It's not like the way that you love your family, but more often.
Oh dear. Well, on this cheery note and our fandom reaffirmation, that's going to bring it home.
I want to close real quick with a comment on the Jurgen Klopp to Spurs rumor. We had a comment
timely
from a complete random who said, "I am a leftover United supporter from the Ferguson era. Jurgen Klopp has long been my favorite manager. If he leaves for Spurs, which would be awesome, and United keep David Moyes, I will switch my allegiance." And that there, ladies and gentlemen, is the difference.
That is the worst.
I love the phrase "from the Ferguson era."
From the past 25 years. Entire existence on this earth.
I'm just proud that our site's big enough that we're getting subjects from the New York Times style article about soccer fans in New York commenting on our blog now. I think that's a real accomplishment, guys. And on that note, for Wheel Dealer Radio, I am Skipjack. Ben, say goodbye to the people.
See you, everybody.
Michael, you raised your podcaster above replacement ratio by a whole 0.5 today. Good job. Thanks for joining us. Say goodbye to the people.
Goodbye to the people.
Have a good one, you guys. Come on, you Spurs.